Chapter 40. "Damn it, Martin," the president said abruptly. "Didn't your Middle East people smell a plot to hijack the Lady Flamborough?" Martin Brogan, the CIA director, shrugged wearily. He was well insulated for taking the blame for every terrorist act that killed Americans or took them hostage. The CIA's successes were rarely heralded, but their mistakes were the stuff of congressional investigations and hype from the news media. The ship, along with its entire passenger list and crew, was snatched from under the noses of the finest security agents in the world, he replied. Whoever dreamed up the venture and executed it is one shrewd operator. The mere scope is far beyond any terrorist activity we've seen in the past. In light of this, I find it hardly surprising our counter-terrorist network was not tipped off in advance. Alan Mercier, the National Security Advisor, removed his glasses and idly wiped the lenses with a handkerchief. "My end struck out, too," he said, backing up Brogan. "Analysis of our eavesdropping monitoring systems failed to reveal any hint of a potential cruise liner hijacking and abduction of two foreign leaders. By sending George Pitt to meet with President Hassan, I sentenced an old friend to death," the president said regretfully. "Not your fault," Mercier consoled him. The president angrily pounded the desk with one fist. "The senator, Halla-Camille, De Lorenzo, and Hassan, I can't believe they're all gone." "We don't know that for sure," said Mercier. The president stared at him. "You can't hide a cruise liner and all the people on board, Alan. Even a dumb politician like me knows that." "There is still a chance." "Chance, hell, it was a suicide mission, plain and simple. All those poor people were probably locked up while the ship was scuttled. The terrorists never meant to escape. They went down, too." "All the facts aren't in yet," Mercier argued. "Just what do we know?" demanded the president. "Our experts are already in Punta del Este working with the Uruguayan security people," explained Brogan. "So far, we only have preliminary conclusions. First, the hijacking has been tied to an Arab group. Two witnesses came forward who were in a passing launch when they saw the Lady Flamborough taking on cargo from a landing barge. They heard crewmen on both vessels speaking Arabic. The landing barge has not been found and is assumed to be scuttled somewhere in the harbor." "Any idea on the cargo?" asked Mercier. "All the witnesses could recall seeing were some drums," answered Brogan. "Second, a phony report was given to the harbor master's office from the cruise liner saying its main generator had broken down, and the vessel would only run navigation lights until repairs were carried out. Then, as soon as it became dark, the unlit ship pulled up its anchor and slipped out of the harbor, colliding with a private yacht carrying important South American businessmen and diplomats, the only fumble in an otherwise flawless execution. Then it disappeared." "Hardly a slop job," said Mercier, "unlike the botched second assassination attempt on Halla-Camille." "A different group entirely," Brogan added. Dale Nichols spoke up for the first time in the meeting. "Which you linked directly to Ahmad Yazid." "Yes, the assassins were not very careful. Egyptian passports were found on the bodies. One, the leader, we identified as a mullah and fanatical follower of Yazid." "Do you think Yazid's responsible for the hijacking?" "He certainly had the motive," answered Brogan. "With President Hassan out of the way, he has a clear shot at taking over the Egyptian government." "The same goes for President De Lorenzo, Topiltzin, and Mexico," Nichols stated flatly. "An interesting tie-in," said Mercier. "What can we do besides send a few CIA terrorist investigators to Uruguay?" asked the president. "What are our options in helping with the search for the Lady Flamborough?" "To answer the first part of your question," said Brogan, "very little. The investigation is in good hands. Uruguayan police and security intelligence chiefs were trained here and in Britain. They know the score and are most cooperative in working with our experts." He paused and avoided the president's eyes. "As to the second, again, very little. The Navy Department has no ships patrolling the ocean off South America. The nearest vessel to the area is a nuclear sub on a training exercise off Antarctica. Our Latin friends are doing fine without us. Over 80 military and commercial aircraft and at least 14 ships from Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay have been combing the sea off Punta del Este since dawn. And they haven't found a clue to the Lady Flamborough's fate, said the President. What little optimism he had before was rapidly eroding into despondency. They will, said Mercier tersely. Wreckage and bodies most certainly will turn up, said Brogan candidly. No ship that size can vanish without leaving some trace behind. Has the story broken in the press yet? Asked the President. I was informed it came over the wire services an hour ago, Nichols answered. The President folded his hands and clenched them tightly. Holy hell will cut loose in Congress when they find out one of their members is a victim of a terrorist act. No telling what kind of revenge they'll demand. The purpose of the Senator's mission alone is enough to cause a major scandal if it leaks out, said Nichols. Strange that terrorists can murder international leaders and diplomats with an army of innocent victims thrown in and get off with a few years in prison, mused the President. But if we play their game and go after them with guns blasting, we're branded immoral, bloodthirsty avengers. The news media get on our case and Congress demands investigations. It hurts being the good guys, said Brogan. He was beginning to sound tired. Nichols stood up and stretched. I don't think we have to worry. Nothing was put down on paper or recorded on tape, and only the men in this room know why Senator Pitt flew down to Punta del Este to confer with President Hassan. Dale's right, said Mercier. We can come up with any number of excuses to explain away his mission. The President unclasped his hands and rubbed his eyes tiredly. George Pitt hasn't been dead a day, and already we're trying to cover our asses. That problem is minor compared to the political disasters we're facing in Egypt and Mexico, said Nichols. With Hassan and De Lorenzo dead, too, Egypt will go the way of Iran and be irretrievably lost for the West. Then with Mexico, he hesitated. We'll have a time bomb ready to go off along our own border. As my chief of staff and closest advisor, what measures do you suggest we take? Nichols' stomach was attacked by a cramp, and his heartbeat quickened. The President and the two intelligence advisers seemed to be studying his eyes. He wondered if the stress that was twisting his guts came from being put on the spot or the thought of a looming foreign catastrophe. I propose we wait for proof. The Lady Flamborough and everybody on her lies on the bottom of the ocean. And if no evidence is forthcoming, asked the President, do we go on waiting until Egypt and Mexico, their leaders missing and presumed dead, are taken over by Topiltzin and Ahmad Yazid, a pair of crazed megalomaniacs? What then? What course of action is left to stop them before it's too late? Short of assassination, none. Nichols's hand nervously massaged his aching stomach. We can only prepare for the worst. Which is? We write off Egypt, Nichols said gravely, and invade Mexico.